This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham and for Cynthia Canty. Here's a name you probably heard at one point or another. Dan Gilbert, founder of Quicken Loans, owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, buyer of about 60 downtown Detroit buildings, Bedrock Real Estate Services, Fathead, Greektown Casino, the list just goes on and on. The national media have called him Detroit's savior, and coverage both nationally and in Michigan has bordered on boosterism. A couple of recent articles have questioned that portrayal and the news media's role in perpetuating the image that Dan Gilbert is single-handedly turning around Detroit. Ryan Felton wrote the article, Dan Gilbert, Downtown Detroit Demigod, for Metro Times. And Anna Clark wrote the piece, Detroit's Dan Gilbert and the Savior Complex, for the Columbia Journalism Review. And they're both here with me now. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Ryan, you wrote an extensive piece on Gilbert and Quicken Loans, and you thoroughly questioned whether Quicken Loans weathered the housing crisis by smart loan practices or whether it was also involved in some of these subprime loans to a lot of Detroit residents. Generally speaking, what kind of answer did you find?
That's a little bit more complex than I think Gilbert tends to let on. I think when you read interviews with him, he will just sort of put it in a plain terms. You know, we didn't mess with those loans. We only sold plain vanilla products. And, you know, when you start contrasting that with some of, you know, the lawsuits that come about, some of just the background data that you find, it gets a little bit more nuanced, I think. And that's sort of, you know, what I arrived at. I couldn't really arrive at any sort of concrete conclusion. But, I mean, there are definitely significant sort of allegations, you know, levied in lawsuits that sort of conflict with that image of just being this spit shine clean lender that, you know, that he's portrayed Quicken to be over the years.
Now, I want to be clear, though. We haven't been able to turn up hard evidence other than the accusations, allegations made in a lawsuit. It's not like Countrywide where, you know, we saw them fold because of their practices. And you note Ryan Felton's reporting is something as a rarity in Detroit, basically questioning if Detroit news media are not asking the hard questions of Gilbert and his companies, because the sense is he's helping Detroit turn around. So what do you think is missing in the coverage of Dan Gilbert?
Well, I think the story that Ryan tackled about what Quicken Loans' lending history in Detroit is it's been a long time coming, you know. It's a very complex story, and I think that's part of why, even though Dan Gilbert's been a very prominent figure in the area for many years now and has had it such a strong influence on downtown, the connection between what his particular company's lending history is in the Detroit area has not been fully scrutinized. I think a lot of times in a city that has been as deinvested in a city that has struggled as much as Detroit is, I think we can journalists can sometimes conflate a private business person with a charity or philanthropic figure, you know? And I think that's where some of this, like, savior idea comes from.
It's easier, though, and it's an easier storyline when you see what he's doing in the city, and a little bit tougher and takes hard work, like Ryan was attempting in his piece, to figure out, okay, what's the real story behind the image?
Right. I think the stories that we mostly see about Dan Gilbert are very timely pieces about when Gilbert, you know, buys a new building or when there's some new project going on and what...
or how he's trying to wipe out blight.
Absolutely.
Or like,
you know, these like very newsy stories that are, which are important and, but you are easier to do because you can just simply talk to a few people. You got the gist. You can write the story up. He got the building, you know, but this like deeper contextual story is hard. It is so hard to do. It takes resources. It takes time. Ideally, it takes more than one reporter. And I think the city has not totally mustered the journalistic fire to really take it on.
Ryan, you spent a good part of a day with Gilbert and several of his top executives at Quicken Loans, including what sounds to be, let's say, an interesting tour of Quicken Loan properties. What was your impression of the man and the company as you were walking away that day?
He is a very smart individual who gave very professional responses to each of my questions. The same could be said for just about everyone that I interviewed that day. There definitely is something that I didn't include in the story, but there were a number of instances that came up where there was a concern expressed about these very types of storylines that I was writing about where it comes up. I mean, one line in particular was, you know, our image is the most important thing to us, was what one person said to me. I mean, I think that they really do treat with the utmost concern, you know, what their image is portrayed to the public. I think it was
evident. And quite critical of reporters who portray them in a way that they don't like.
Right. I mean, for instance, in the middle of our interview, he asked the other individual who was in the room with me to print out a 9-page point-by-point rebuttal of a story that was done in 2011 by the Center for Public Integrity. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're and it was very long-winded, and yeah, there's a very critical response to any story that has been done with that, you know, raises any sort of critical point.
I got the feeling at the beginning of your piece that there was this kind of public relations attempt at shock and awe for you, just to show you what a wonderful place it was to work, how much Dan Gilbert was doing for downtown, how awesome it was just to be hanging out with him that day.
That was one of the most perplexing parts, I think, of the day. I understand the fact that, you know, there is this sort of effort to present to outsiders, maybe visitors, guests, what is going on downtown, and I understand that. I'm not sure if there's another similar instance in this country where a private entity gives a sort of tour like that. I'd be interested to see if that's the case. But to give a reporter who works in the city, lives in the city, has been around the city for a while, a tour of places that he or she can visit on any given day, under the guise of just saying, isn't this something? It was, it really felt like just a blatant PR attempt to just, you know, kind of say, like, isn't this something that you're getting the chance to experience this? And it was very awkward because that's not why we arranged that day.
Right. It sounds like they were treating you like they might somebody from New York Times or the Washington Post or somebody from out of town.
Right. And, you know, why do that for an outfit in Detroit? I would even wonder if any of the outlets in Detroit, like the Free Press or the News, if they've been given a tour like that.
I want to ask you about an experience I had recently. I sat down with three generations of one family in the Jefferson Chalmers neighborhood, and they were talking about this disconnect between what's happening in downtown and Midtown, or they insist it's still Cass Corridor. I'm sorry, Midtown is just an invention, a label that's what they told me anyway. And they say there's this idea that there are the Gilberts, the Illiches, and Mike Duggan doing their thing in downtown and Midtown. It really doesn't have anything to do with what we're experiencing and living in the neighborhoods and trying to go to school and keep our jobs. Do you think that's a common disconnect between the residents of Detroit and people like Gilbert?
I think that's very common. I mean, there is no doubt that the day-to-day experience downtown is very, very different now than it was 5 years ago. So there's absolutely been a very visible and tangible impact, and this sort of sweeping tour that they give, you know, is meant to illustrate some real changes. But for people who do live here every day and aren't within a mile or so of downtown, it doesn't feel that different, you know? And I get that there, like, it takes a certain amount of time for citywide redevelopment to happen, but it is the revitalization of Detroit, quote unquote, tends to make Detroit synonymous with just the downtown Midtown area. And what I think a lot of residents feel is that their stories aren't sufficiently acknowledged as context for that. And I think the sort of PR day that like Ryan experienced, I think that sort of like reveals a certain assumption of the company, you know, that the journalists that they connect with do not know much about the city. I think that's troubling because, of course, there are plenty of reporters here with a lot of roots here and with a lot of knowledge here. And I feel like leveraging that is important.
I think, you know, there is something to be said about the fact that I didn't necessarily get the impression throughout the day that anybody involved in the company ever thought that their presence would necessarily grow as big as it did. Mm. So I don't think that they really thought that they would ever even get – Gilbert would ever get involved with like the blight removal task force. I don't think they ever foresaw that. But with that said, I think that there is this sort of disconnect. I mean, yeah, you know, every great city has a great downtown. I think that that's true. But – every city, great city, isn't as big as Detroit is either. And I think that there still is, you know, this sort of huge disconnect between what is happening downtown and sort of, you know, how that, you know, it's juxtaposed within everywhere else. It kind of does raise the question that I think some reporters have recently, you know, suggested, is this revitalization, you know, legit? I think that.
Yeah, there's also the question of, is this, instead of trickle down, trickle out?
Sure.
Are these neighborhoods ever going to see any kind of real benefit from this? I also wanted to ask you guys, Gilbert seems to really insist on it's okay to make money, but this company also has a mission, and they are behind the blight removal mm-hmm. effort, they're behind the M1 mm-hmm. construction. They are doing good in that they're buying these buildings really cheap that have been deteriorating, empty for years, decades, and rebuilding them and occupying them.
Beautiful buildings, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, can you do that? Is that something that you see from companies? Usually you don't hear a company saying, not only are we going to make money, we've got a mission to actually do good.
Sure, and I think that that's – I can't remember it off the top of my head what it's doing good by being good or whatever his phrase is. I mean, I think that there is something to that. Of course, they understand that they're a business. I think that that's a fundamental understanding of what they do. But I think that does just sort of, you know, to get back to an earlier point, translate to how the media portrays him here. I mean, it's a city that hasn't seen this kind of investment in, gosh, you know, decades, you know. And I think when you get to certain aspects of things, like, for instance, the Wayne County Jail, there's obviously a lot of problems involved in the Wayne County Jail. But when Dan Gilbert pens a letter that says, you know, this is one of the biggest mistakes ever, that immediately gets elevated to, you know, this is what Gilbert says about the jail, and that's a headline and that's a story. Anna wrote a great piece in Next City about what downtown jails could, you know, mean for a city and what that means for its residents. And you didn't see nothing similar like that here. And I think that, I don't know if it's necessarily problematic, but I definitely think it's fascinating that for whatever reason, we're not seeing a headline that says mixed reviews on what a downtown jail means, says experts or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think that there's just this sort of dynamic going on where you have an individual who's done a lot to turn around the city that just immediately gets elevated to this platform that, you know, once he says something, that becomes a story. I think we've seen that time and time again.
I think the key part is that, like, I mean, with in a, I mean, there, because Dan Gilbert has an outsized influence, you know, like certainly in his private investment, but obviously in his voice as well. And I think the thing to remember, you know, for reporters is like keeping that sort of like skepticism about you. So it's not necessarily that Dan Gilbert's this like awful guy or that mm-hmm. he's done terrible things. You know, like it's not like there's some like scandal necessarily that's like meant to be uncovered, but it's just sort of like acknowledging that here's a person with disproportionate influence on the present of the city and certainly the future of the city. And so, and I think what gets tricky is that a lot of us as Detroit residents are really rooting for the city and hope that that influence really does, you know, do what he says and does like pay off for the good, you know, and that's where we get maybe a little caught up with some of our personal feelings and like wanting a savior, you know. But I think like the key thing is it's just like recognizing the power he has like within like our current culture right now at the city at this moment, and just keeping our skepticism about us, like not just like reporting something so because they said it so, you know, like just like acknowledging that there are other voices that matter, there are other realities that, you know, coexist with Dan Gilbert.
So last question, a double-barreled question, what do you hope to see from Dan Gilbert, and what do you hope to see from the coverage of Dan Gilbert in the coming year?
I guess I would hope to see that there is a this sort of fierce commitment that he has to accomplishing some of the tasks that he, you know, says he wants to see done. You know, I think particularly with the blight removal, but taking that one step further, what do you do when the blight is gone? I understand that they have ideas, you know, with what you could do with that, but I think, you know, it needs to be emphasized the fact that a guy who is handling a blight task force is a guy who makes mortgages. So, you know, I think that I want to—
And is a developer.
Right. And so I think, you know, what I would like to see is this fierce commitment that he says he has to tackling something like that, a complete understanding of what the outcome is, not just when you get it down, because I think that there is a much more complicated conversation there. Can you actually catch up to the amount of blight that is in the city? I mean, if you tear it down, are you going to stop the other blight that's still, you know, going to eventually right. occur. So I think that that is –
And with 62,000
right.
places potentially on the auction block next year.
Right. So I think, you know, to me, I think that that's probably one of the most, you know, important and interesting elements I think that does need to be sort of pushed is what is the plan beyond removing the blight? Because we do know that there is money built into the bankruptcy plan to see some more homes come down. But I still think that there's kind of just this open-ended question as to, okay, we want to get the blight down, but what's the plan after that and who benefits from that?
Anna?
Well, I would love to see stories about that. A few other stories that I would love to see would be some kind of exploration of the relationship between the Gilbert-owned buildings, the Gilbert companies that own the buildings, and the tenant businesses, a little bit more understanding of like what lease agreements are, how it's working, what, how long they stay, are they successful? Does the Gilbert company have some kind of stake in that? You know what I mean? I don't know. I would love to see something like that threaded out more. I would also love to see reporters get beyond the point where we let the sort of Gilbert narrative get ahead of us. There was, for example, a TV report this past year that proclaimed that Dan Gilbert had, like, quote, snapped up the Wayne County Jail property when, of course, nobody's purchased that yet. He had just submitted some sketches, and it just remained like that. It just remained headline like that, you know, for on and on and on. You know, it was just clearly wrong. and I think sometimes we get a little carried away with, like, assuming that Gilbert momentum downtown is, like, just unstoppable when we're telling that story even before it happens. And so I think I would really love to see reporters sort of, like, just be aware of what other forces are exerting power, like, believe it or not, the public sphere. You know?
So pull back. Take a little bit more critical scrutiny of what's happening in downtown and, mm-hmm. and not just play into the narrative.
Absolutely.
That is Anna Clark. She writes for the Columbia Journalism Review. And we also heard from Ryan Felton. He writes for the Metro Times. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.